Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Today is the day. Wow, man, we've got a show lineup today that is just packed with interesting folks and interesting conversations. So, as always, we're going to lead off with Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation, the Daily Signal. He and I are going to talk about all things on the political front, and there's a lot to talk about. And then Dr. Rosemary Stein is going to come on. She and I are going to talk about why paperbacks are better for kids than ebooks. We're also going to talk about the mental health crisis among kids in America and something that we're describing as reefer madness. Yes, reefer madness. Yes, it's real. Apparently, the daily consumption of marijuana has really severe mental consequences. Maybe not a surprise to some, but maybe a surprise to those who partake of that every day. And then I've got two different conversations in the second hour that you won't want to miss. Joshua Straub is going to be here. Joshua is a wonderful marriage and family therapist. He and his wife, Christy, have written a book for kids called What Am I Feeling? It actually includes this really cool pull-out feelings chart. I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to get kids talking about what they're feeling, especially in identifying those feelings and then not letting our feelings control us. So we're going to have that conversation. And then at the end of the second hour, I got a real treat for you. Dr. Albert Moeller, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, is going to be here. He and I are going to talk about orthodoxy and orthopraxy, but we're going to do so in a way that I think you're going to love, centered around the Apostles' Creed. Dr. Moeller has written a new book about why the Apostles' Creed isn't just some dusty old stodgy orthodoxy, but has real application for the way that Christians are called to live in the culture today as people of the faith once delivered to the saints. So I'm excited about today's lineup. We are going to be back in just a moment to have an encouraging conversation with Tommy Binion about the Mueller Report. Yes, I know you've heard discouraging things, but we're going to have an encouraging conversation about the Mueller Report and, well, frankly, all things politics. We'll be right back.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City.
Well, welcome back. This is Mornings with Carmen. My conversation partner is Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation. You can follow him on Twitter at TP Binion. Tommy, I can't even imagine what we might have to talk about today in terms of politics and the intersection with people of faith.
Well, good morning. It's great to be your conversation partner this morning. We certainly do have a lack of big news to go through. It's astonishing.
I don't know what we're going to talk about today, man. Let's just lead off with this little. Well, we have this report. We don't actually know how little the report is. We do know that what we have from the special counsel is a report delivered to the attorney general, and what we have from the attorney general is a letter. Including things like this. While this report does not include that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Tell us what's in the Mueller report from what we know from Attorney General Barr.
Yeah, so the four-page letter from the Attorney General to Congress describes the report as sort of in two parts. One is pertaining to an investigation that the Trump campaign or anybody associated with the Trump campaign or any American colluded with the Russians or aided and abetted them in their attempts to interfere with our election. And there he says the investigation did not establish there was any collusion, any aiding, any abetting by anybody associated with the Trump campaign back in the 2016 election. This other part, obstruction of justice, now – this pertains to things that the president did that are a matter of public record. The chief among them would be the firing of James Comey. And so the question isn't, is there evidence there that we don't know about? The question is, does the firing of James Comey indicate that the president is guilty of obstruction of justice. Apparently, according to the letter from Attorney General Barr, the special counsel sort of makes both cases and doesn't come to a conclusion. But it isn't that there is evidence in the report. It is rather that there are these actions that are a matter of public record, and the question is whether or not they amount to obstruction of justice. My viewpoint, and I think it's legally founded, is that the president has the absolute constitutional right to fire somebody in his administration. If that act in and of itself is a legal act, it doesn't matter what the intent is, and it can't ever be obstruction of justice because he has the absolute legal constitutional authority to do it. So, yes, it does have that quote in there, does not exonerate him. But it isn't an indication that there is some buried evidence in the report of obstruction of justice.
So, Tommy, one of the things that I like to listen to when folks are making all kinds of statements across, you know, across a wide spectrum of opinion related to how they feel. Right. So all of that should indicate that we're not talking necessarily about a line of facts. Right. We're talking about rhetoric related to how people feel and the espousing of their opinions about things. And so I want to encourage people to be listening for facts. And I want to encourage us to wait until facts are like available in a meaningful way before folks just leap to judgment. But that does not seem to be the way of things in Washington.
Well, we've lived through over the last 2 years just a perfect example of that, right? So we've been told over and over and over again that this investigation is going to yield an absolute link between the Trump campaign and the Russian government and their attempts to interfere in our election. In fact, it's been asserted, even by people that were involved with the congressional investigations that found no evidence of collusion, that there is evidence, that they've seen it, that there are mountains of evidence. We've been told over and over and over again, and of course it's going to be in the Mueller report. Well, if we had taken your advice over those last 2 years and we had waited until there were facts, and I don't know how we're ever going to get any more definitive than this Mueller report, 2,800 subpoenas, 40 investigators, 19 lawyers, nobody could ever, if Mueller didn't find it, nobody's going to find it. If we had waited for that definitive answer, then I think the fact would be there's absolutely no case to be made that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians. But we've sort of lived under this myth or this assumption or this early conclusion or opinion under these 2 years. I think it's damaged our country quite a bit. But I'm glad that the truth is here. And by the way, I think this is great news. No matter how you feel about the president, it is good news that nobody, no Americans were colluding with a foreign government to interrupt our elections. That's good news no matter how you slice it.
Right. Like one of my little notes for myself is we should all be glad that there was no finding of criminal conspiracy between the president of the United States and a hostile foreign power. Like everyone should be glad about that today. No matter how you feel about things or your opinion about things, we should all be glad that after all of this investigation, there's no finding of criminal conspiracy between the president of the United States and a hostile foreign power. Like, why can't we all just be glad about that? And instead, we seem to, well, you know, we seem to be a people who have become prone to celebrating the pain of others. And I don't like that. I don't think that that's it's certainly not Christian. I don't even think it's particularly American. It's very German. But I don't think that that what I see on social media and frankly, in some of the mainstream media where we celebrate the failure or the pain of other people is particularly helpful in the conversation today.
I couldn't agree more, Carmen. That's absolutely spot on. We should cheer for the things that are good for our nation. We know that we have policy disagreements, but if we allow those, and they are deep-seated disagreements, if we allow those to turn us against one another, we've got real problems, and we'll never overcome those disagreements and fulfill our promise and potential as a nation. You're never going to convince somebody that hates you or that knows that you hate them. You are going to convince somebody who knows that you love them. That's where hearts and minds are changed. That's where disagreements are settled by open minds and open ears. And if we get to a place where it's just two teams and we're just playing against each other, we're trying to sneak one past the ref. We're never going to win as a country. So I couldn't agree more. I do think that this is a moment where we can come together. We can put this behind us, and we can go about the work of the country. There is lots to be done. This presidency has two more years at the very least, and there is a lot that the president can accomplish that nearly all of us would agree with, Republicans and Democrats. And so I'm looking forward to if Congress can put this behind them and work on those things, I'm really looking forward to those accomplishments.
Hey, Tommy, when we come back, we're going to demonstrate in a few sentences how to talk about something like the Michael Avenatti thing and how to do so in a way that does not celebrate the demise of an individual. So, friends, we want to encourage you to do the same today in your conversations related to some really striking headline news. And Tommy Binion from the Daily Signal at the Heritage Foundation and I will be right back to demonstrate how to do that.
Give me a good cup of coffee.
So continuing my conversation with Tommy Binion from the Daily Signal at the Heritage Foundation, you can follow him on Twitter at TP Binion. Tommy, Michael Avenatti is quite a character. He rose to the attention of pretty much all Americans when he presented Stormy Daniels as his client, seeking in no small way to bring down the president of the United States. And that continues to be an ongoing conversation. But Michael Avenatti now has legal troubles of his own, having sought apparently to what's the language I'm looking for here? Extort something like $20 million from Nike, or he was going to today at 11 a.m. release some very shocking information about that company. Instead, he's facing federal indictments on both coasts. So without celebrating the demise of an individual, can we talk about how you assess the credibility of an individual before you just say, oh, that guy would be a good president? Because this was a guy who at one point, was going to make a run for the presidency.
No, I think we do this all of the time in our politics. You can look through our history and you can see everybody running for president. And especially everybody that has been successful at it or come close to the presidency makes a case about their credentials, makes a case about what they've accomplished in their life, what their career has been. When we as Americans consider who we want to be our president, we don't just ask ourselves, do we agree with all of their positions on issues? We ask ourselves, what do we think about their character? What do we think about their career? What do we think about the things that they've accomplished? Do they have the experience necessary? And I think that that is just as important, maybe more important, than the consideration of whether or not you agree with them, quote unquote, on the issues. The question is, what has this person been able to demonstrate in their lives that I could say would make them a good president? As the cable news cycle has become ubiquitous and as social media has become ubiquitous, that timeline that we're looking at and that question shrinks and we're just trying to decide whether or not we agree with a 280-word tweet. And I think that that's sad. I think that we have a solemn duty as Americans when we consider our president to consider those bigger, more important things. Clearly, now that this case has come about, I don't think that Mr. Avenatti is going to be successful in his run for president. And you issued a challenge. How do we talk about this case without celebrating the demise of an individual? Well, there is something to celebrate here. It's not the demise of an individual, but it's justice. Nike was extorted. They were faced with a difficult decision, but they made it easy by doing the absolute right thing. They called the Department of Justice. That's what you do. We can celebrate that we have a justice system in this country that if we are victims of a crime, we can rely on. And I bet Nike feels pretty good this morning that they were able to rely on our justice system. And that is something, as Americans, we can celebrate.
Absolutely. So you've got a colleague at the Heritage Foundation who has written a really great piece on church plants in America and how they're lifting up broken communities. Can we talk about this piece by Erica Anderson that's at the Daily Signal?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's Erica Anderson. It's on the Daily Signal. She's actually at the Independent Women's Forum, which is a great organization that everybody listening should check out. But here's the gist of the piece that you're talking about. There are some trends in our country that we have to be honest about. The suicide rate is on the rise, very high, perhaps a record high in the suicide rate. The same with drug overdoses. These measures of despair, suicide and drug overdoses, are very, very high. At the same time, our church attendance is on a downward trend. And those two trends are happening at the same time. They're not a coincidence. I think everybody listening knows that those two things are not a coincidence. So what this piece describes is another trend, church planting, and how that has been successful. These despair metrics, they're location specific. They spike in certain locations. They spike in maybe towns where the economy has sagged or locations where population density is very sparse and people feel alienated and alone. And the absolute vaccination to alienation and loneliness is the church. And when there is a local church community that people want to go to, that people will be missed if they don't show up at, I think that that those tragedies that occur, they go down. And so any trend that has a chance at reversing the suicide rate and the drug overdose rate is a good trend. And so this church planting trend is a good one. We pass empty churches all the time. We pass churches every day on lots of street corners, but they're empty. And if there are new churches, new church plant models that can be copied, models that work, models that appeal to people, then we should be celebrating those things. And normally I talk about federal policy. This isn't a federal policy. This is just civic engagement. It has nothing to do with the government. It's all what individuals are called to do. They're called to start new churches and new communities and care for their neighbors. And when that trend is on the way up, it's a very good thing in our society.
So if you're listening right now and you have been shocked in the last 24 hours to learn of two suicides of survivors of the Parkland school shooting, or you are shocked to learn today of the suicide of one of the Sandy Hook victims, dads who took his own life yesterday in Newtown, Connecticut. If these are conversations that are not openly being had in your congregation, then you as a Christian are the one that needs to start the conversation. And so let me encourage you today, start with a conversation with your pastor if necessary, but find a way in the context of your worshiping community, of your church, to get the conversation going about suicide. I've got one friend on social media who posted simply that on Sunday during the prayer time, he just felt led to just say out loud, is anybody struggling with this? Is anybody in our community struggling with this? And three men raised their hands. And it transformed not just their time together on Sunday, but it transformed the way that that congregation is now walking its life out together against the challenges that face a lot of people in our culture today. And then let me also add, if you're struggling with this right now, please call the Suicide Crisis Hotline at 1-800-273-8255. Your life is precious, and your life is precious not only to God, but to your brothers and sisters in Christ out here on Faith Radio. Tommy Binion, thank you so much for joining us again today on Mornings with Carmen.
You bet. Have a great show.
Thanks. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break to lighten up, and then we'll be right back. So are you worried about kids today? I am. Are you interested in conversations about what's like best for our kids or what's at least better for kids? Rosemary Stein is going to be here. We're going to talk about the mental health crisis among kids today. We're going to talk about the effect of what they're reading and how they're reading what they're reading. She and I are also going to talk about what we're going to describe as reefer madness, because it is real. The daily consumption of marijuana actually does have really significant mental consequences, and it's something that you and I need to know about. So Dr. Rosemary Stein is going to be up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So I like electronic stuff, but I'm enough of a bibliophile that I love the physical book. And so if you're a person who you've been relying maybe on an e-reader for your Bible, like you've been using a Bible app and you've been using a devotional app, all of those things are great. But if you don't actually have something that you can take notes in, that you can physically hold on to, that you can turn to the page with the date on it and say, you know what, this is my devotional material for the day. We have got a Bible giveaway going on this month. It's the 1 Year Devotions for Women with Jill Briscoe. She gives deeper insight and understanding into Scripture. It's a great way to spend time in God's Word every single day. And so if you are interested in having a copy of the 1 Year Devotions for Women with Jill Briscoe, let us know. You can go to myfaithradio.com. We're giving away a copy every week this month. And so if you are in need of a Bible devotional, this is your opportunity to get one. We want to put one literally in your hands. Go to myfaithradio.com.
Why did God command animal sacrifice? This is Jim Garlow. Even in the garden, after Adam and Eve lost their innocence and walked into sin, God replaced their chosen covering, fig leaves, with the covering he commanded, animal skins. Hebrews 9:22 says, "In fact, the law requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood, and without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness." But it goes even further. The animal being sacrificed was to be one without blemish, uncontaminated. Again, you see the symbolism God uses to teach us his truth. Spotless animals foreshadowed the sinless Lamb of God who sits at the right hand of the Father in heaven forever. And the sacrifice was fulfilled once and for all on the cross. That's why Christians today need not sacrifice animals anymore. It's finished. In this season of Lent, look up. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
So that is that's always the music that reminds me that Rosemary Stein is here. Dr. Rose, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for that welcome, Carmen. I'm surely happy to be here. I love that song.
I do too.
I'm smiling.
It's just right. It fills us up with at least a moment of joy. But we have some things to talk about today. One really, really serious topic, and that's going to be mental health, the mental health crisis among our kids. And but I'd love to start with this, the story that I just read about actually books, physical books, books that are, you know, board books when they're little kids, and then books that have real pages that little kids can sit in on laps and turn the pages and go back and forth really easily and learn to read. And why are books that are made of paper better for kids than e-books or books that we might read with them or to them on some sort of electronic device?
Carmen, it's because it's real. Books that you can hold, that you can smell, that you can turn the pages, that evoke certain feelings, emotions, they're real. You can cuddle the book if you love it. It's much more difficult to cuddle the e-book. And the ebook holds a whole bunch of different books, so it's not personal to you. And when we talk about our children's mental health and the reason that our children are doing so poorly is because of the same thing. They don't have the kind of relationships. As we were growing up, we actually had a relationship sometimes with our book. We carried that book, and it was dog-eared. And that was when that book was not serviceable anymore. You couldn't read that book. It was like you lost a little part of yourself. They can't do that anymore with these ebooks or the electronic devices and all that. It's just not the same. They don't. They can't conjure their imagination in such depth. They can't remember where the new words are. It really is pretty significant. That doesn't mean parents don't look at the ebooks. They're good tools, but I think that we're overusing these tools versus having the actual books. Books are real.
So in just a minute, we're actually going to talk with Joshua Straub about a book that he and his wife, Christy, just wrote. And I have the physical book. And there's no way that this particular book, which is just called What Am I Feeling, which has this pull out feelings chart. There's no way that you could do that with an ebook. So I think one of the advantages of books, like physical books, is that we can dog ear pages. We can go back. We can make notes. We can write them to someone. We have books in our little family library where, you know, Jonathan, who is going to turn 30 this year, when he was six, he wrote his name in it. And that's Jonathan's book. And when Jonathan has kids, that book's going to his house, right? And it still lives at our house because right now we still have little people in and out the door frequently. And so Jonathan's book, which is part of the Adam Raccoon series, which, right? We have whole series of books in our little family library that I don't know that you could get today on an e-reader, but even if you could, it wouldn't have been the one that Jonathan held when he was six. And who now can look back and, and say to Matthew or say to Evelyn, this was my book when I was your age, and this is what I loved about it. And now you can have it, or now let's read it together. This is the way I learned to read. Let's learn to read using this same book. There's a legacy part of this as well.
Oh, yes. And something that, like you said, Carmen, you carry down, take to your children and your grandchildren, and you actually can physically give them a book. It's so much so different than opening a tablet up and saying, oh, look at this book. It's fantastic. And I read this as a kid. And it loses its depth. I mean, I think that's what it is. And our children, at the same time, I think that we're raising them without that depth. And that's why they're not as strong as children in other generations because they're lacking depth, and books have depth.
So let's encourage folks who are listening right now. If you don't, be a person who reads books to kids. You could go to your local elementary school and you could volunteer to read books to kids. You could go to your local public library and volunteer to read books to kids. You could do it at your local church. You could read books to kids. And you're saying to yourself, well, maybe I don't, maybe that's not my thing. You could buy books for families who have little kids. I think that part of the stretch, Rosemary, is that there's just a lot of young families that they look at the cost of a book and they, they turn it over on the back and they're like, wow, I don't know that for $15 I can do that. Like that $15 is really precious to a young family. So let's encourage our listeners to give books as gifts, give physical books as gifts, and get really good ones. So Rosemary, let's talk about the mental health crisis among young people today. I know that many of our listeners will be aware that the second survivor of the Parkland shooting, now out of, I don't know, survivor's guilt or just the stress and trauma of living in a world that's as violent as ours is, one of those young people has taken their own life. One of the dads of the Newtown, Connecticut, Sandy Hook school shooting took his life yesterday or the day before. Let's just talk about the mental health crisis in America, but let's hone in on young people.
Yeah, and it comes down, Carmen, to relationships. And our relationships are, once again, just like books, they're not real. Kids are making relationships on electronic devices and all these social media, but they don't have real friends many times that can hug them and be there for them and cry with them through the heartbreaks and the smiles. That holds you up. It builds you. And then if on top of that, as parents, we think that we're too fuddy-duddy or we're distracted, then we're really not giving our children the relationships, the depth of the relationships that they need. And this is where a lot of this is coming from. And we're resorting then to pills and to psychiatrists and to social workers instead of resorting to ourselves and giving them the time. It's like that $15 that you were talking about that parents are saying, oh, I can't buy this book. Well, if instead of the $15, let's go to ourselves. Can I spend this extra time with my kid? Can I wake up a little bit earlier? Yesterday, Hannah went back to college, and it was really darn, you know, hard to wake up at 5:30 in the morning just to say goodbye to her. I got up out of bed and I staggered into the kitchen just so I could give her a hug, so we could sit down, so I can make sure that she had something to eat. And I know that that strengthens a 19-year-old, as she's going to be by herself for a few days and she's not going to have her family with her. Those are the sacrifices that we need to make. And it seems really silly. Why would a 19-year-old need her mommy? But people need people, and we're not resorting to the depth of building our people. And this is where we're breaking our people down. It's not in a pill. It's in the giving of ourselves that we truly make them stronger.
So I'll just make a confession here, Rose. You know, I'm 50 and I still need my mommy. So little shout out to Ruth Ann this morning. I am grateful to God for you and the way that you read to me when I was a child. Thank you for my copy of The Velveteen Rabbit that I still have. And I feel the love because it is so worn, and that's the message of the book. And thank you for all the times that you got up early or stayed up late to worry over me and talk with me. And teach me how to have real relationships with real people. Dr. Rosemary Stein and I are going to be right back. We're going to talk next about reefer madness. I know. People have been waiting the whole show, Rose, to hear us talk about reefer madness. So that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. So, Dr. Rose, what is going on in terms of marijuana? Like, right, I'm amazed, maybe I shouldn't be amazed, at the proliferation of ways in which people are accessing not just medical marijuana and not just recreational marijuana, but marijuana just, gosh, in really extraordinary ways in the culture. And nobody seems to think that it has any downside and that there's any problematic effect. Tell us what we now know about that.
Well, I'm going to go back in history a little bit before I talk about marijuana. I'm going to talk to you about opioids. And 20 years ago, we as a medical community thought that there was no consequence to opioids, and this was a new godsend. And so we made pain the fifth vital sign. We said that it's okay to give opioids and it can be somewhat unrestricted because they weren't going to build any sort of addiction. And they're much better than actual codeine and medications that we were using for pain, and that nobody should have pain. Well, I think we were all in the middle of deluding ourselves and thinking that this was a wonderful thing, because 20 years later, we know the truth. I fear, Carmen, that we are heading down the same path as that with marijuana, where we're thinking that this thing that has been around with people that are older like you and I, we have seen marijuana. We saw what it did to the kids in the 60s that came right before us and how it changed their lives and how it led to use of LSD and a whole bunch of other things. So we're scrutinizing this a little bit better and saying, wait a minute, we understand that this isn't really as good as it's all held out to be. And then on top of that, if you're a physician and you've seen a lot of these kids and they do go psychotic and they do have a sort of a losing of themselves and a not being able to remember things as well, then you say, wow, this is not an altogether good thing. There may be applicable uses, which I have to tell you the truth, as a doctor of 30 years, I haven't found. But I think that all in all, for the most part, we're being sold a bag of goods. And people get very upset at me when I say that. But scientifically, I can't see that marijuana is a medication to be used without scrutiny.
So for those of you who are listening and you're saying to yourselves, Dr. Rose and Carmen are they're just old fuddy-duddies and they don't think their opinion. This is all their opinion. Hey, we're actually reading this off of sources like ABC News that has an article up right now on their website. Daily consumption of marijuana may have serious mental consequences. And they are sharing the results of a study that acknowledges that marijuana
which is still illegal under federal law, is now fully legal in 10 U.S. states and the District of Columbia, our nation's capital, and that cities across the country have stopped prosecuting people for possession of marijuana in at least small amounts, but that this on-demand recreational cannabis delivery right to your home or your place of business does have, based on research that looked at over 900 people, psychotic effects. And so we're not making this up. We're not trying to, gin up controversy where there isn't any. This is the medical community doing its own research saying, this is not safe. Rose, why should we pay attention when the medical community tells us something's not safe if in the past they have missed it so dramatically on things like opioids?
And hopefully, and don't take things completely from the expert. And that's the thing. You really have to observe and listen when people that are trusted and are trying to come to you from a balanced source are telling you about the dangers of something. Because it's your children's lives. It's their brains. They only have one brain to use for the rest of their lives. If you're being deluded as to the use of marijuana, or you think, oh, it's not going to affect the kids, then, in 20, 30 years, you might know differently, but you only have this place in time to be able to make a difference in a child's life. And if you only run 1%, even 2% of a chance that you're going to be the cause of that child not doing well in 20, 30 years. And that's what I tell the parents. If this one thing is going to be the stumbling block for your child to do well, isn't it better to put it away? Isn't it better to look for another resource for pain and for comfort? Don't take that chance. If alcohol is it, if marijuana is it, then put it away, because your child's life and their ability to do well is too valuable to let that be the one thing that gets between them and success in this life and beyond.
So one of our listeners has asked that for us to define the word psychotic. I used the word, that they were having psychotic episodes. Could you define psychosis or psychotic for us?
I'll define that in a young man who was, to start with, a very sociable young man, very outgoing, and then went to a party, had something to drink, and then decided that he was going to have more and more and more marijuana and just take it in the inhaled source. He had a psychotic spell. And what did that mean? He went nuts. He overturned everything at the party. He was dangerous. He was saying things that were absolutely terrifically mean and aggressive. He was unrecognizable. And at the end, they had to shackle him down and take him to the local hospital. And they couldn't keep him there because he was so dangerous to himself that he had to be admitted to a major psych ward. And there he stayed for a couple of weeks. This young man is still suffering from the sequela of that episode that happened a couple of years ago. He's now sort of mentally disabled. We just got his disability form so that we could help him through his disability. This is psychosis. You become another person that you never almost imagined. Your family members never imagined them to be. Let me tell you one thing, Carmen. Seeing the pain in that mom's eyes when she would bring him in and she would see that the little boy that she raised had become something else, sort of a monster in what they were describing to her. And afterwards, he lost his affect. He didn't care about his family. All he wanted to do is go back and continue to do these different drugs that he had, he had exposed himself to. The pain that mom felt, I can't even describe that to you. And so if there's any chance that that is going to happen to any one of our children, I would say right now, stop, so that that does not happen to our kid.
Dr. Rose, thank you so much. Friends, find Dr. Rosemary on Facebook, Rosemary Stein, MD. That's on Facebook, Rosemary Stein, MD. Dr. Rose, thank you so much. We look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you.
what are you facing today? What are your kids facing today? What are the conversations and decisions that you have to make today? Let me encourage you to consider God's eternal perspective on each one of those things. And I know that for myself, I can get caught up in the temporal, I can get caught up in the momentary, and I can lose sight of the eternal. And so let my encouragement to you today be this. Consider God's eternal perspective and then bring it to bear on whatever temporal reality you're dealing with. And if you need a good book to help you understand God's eternal perspective, there is one. It's called the Bible. And I would invite you to dig around in it and mine it for all of the treasures that God has placed therein. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen, and we'll be right back. So I'm not going to waste it. So friends, when we talk about the value of a physical book, we've been talking about the value of a physical book, and we're talking about little kids. There's great value in physical books for you and I as well. And up next, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Josh Straub. He and his wife, Christy, have written a wonderful book to inspire conversations with our children about feelings. And maybe the most important thing about this book is this. It helps children understand and ask God to help them remember that, quote, a feeling is just a feeling. It's not in charge of you. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at MyFaithRadio.com.